When instrumentation controller Joanne Morgan was in firing room number one for the historic moonshot in 1969, she was the only woman. NASA has come a long way since. Today, the very same firing room is led by a woman, and 30% of the engineers supporting NASA's Artemis Moon program are women too. So what's it like to be a woman with a career in STEM today? We'll sit down with three female employees at NASA to find out. I'm Daryl Nail, and that's next on the Rocket Ranch.
EGS Program Chief Engineer, verify no constraints to launch.
3, 2, 1, and liftoff.
Welcome to space.
3 women at NASA with careers in STEM, which stands for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. We'll talk with a space station engineer about her experience during the early days of the space shuttle program.
So when I started working with NASA on shuttle, there was many, many times I was the only female in the room.
And we'll hear from the woman NASA has charged with helping send the first woman to the moon about what she's learned along the way.
That is something that I have learned over my career. I probably didn't do it that great in the beginning, you know, because I was a woman who worked with mostly men.
And we'll get advice from a young astrophysicist who is part of the team that sent the Perseverance rover to the planet Mars.
I need to make this trail for the person behind me, so I'm going to keep going.
But we begin with the woman who will give the go to launch the world's most powerful rocket, launch director Charlie Blackwell Thompson.
When you were a young girl, what did you dream about doing when you grew up?
You know, I'm probably a different case, right? I talk to young students and young people all the time. It's one of the things that I really enjoy doing. And what I hear from a lot of them is, I know exactly what I want to do. And I think that's fantastic. That's awesome. But that was not me. I did not know what I wanted to do. I at one time thought that what I wanted to do was to own like a professional sports team. I wasn't quite sure what the path to that was. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. So I was that kid in high school that wasn't sure, didn't know what I wanted to study. And I had a fantastic teacher. So shout out to all the teachers out there who are encouraging our youth every single day. I had a fantastic teacher. And if you think about the time frame that this was happening in, it was in a time where there were not a lot of women in engineering. And so my high school physics teacher asked me one day, Charlie, what are you going to study when you get to college? And I said, I don't know. And he said, have you ever thought about studying engineering? And I said, well, what would I do with an engineering degree, Doc? And he said, what couldn't you do? And at the time, I honestly didn't find that terribly helpful. It wasn't like what you could do this.
Right. You were hoping for a list.
But he was absolutely right. What couldn't you do? And it was because of that nudge in it, kind of in the arm, or hey, think about this, that I decided to pursue engineering when I went off to school. And that's what I did. And I never changed my major, stuck with it the whole way through school.
Were there obstacles in your path as a woman coming up in a education, getting an education in STEM and then a career?
I don't know if I would say in school there were specific obstacles, other than there weren't a lot of women. And so, you know, there was maybe that piece of it where you questioned, is this the right field for me? But no specific obstacles. I would say the first really tough obstacle that I felt like I came upon was when I started having my kids. Now keep in mind the time frame, right? This was before there were the family-friendly policies that are pretty mainstream today. The ability to flex your time, to telework, those things were unheard of in the early days. And so to me, that was an obstacle because I'm a mother of 3 kids. You know, I love my children. I want to be involved with all of the activities that they have. And so for me, that was the first time that I felt like an obstacle or a challenge, you know, that I had to make a choice or concessions between maybe my family and my work. And so that was kind of tough. I was lucky in that I had a great program manager at the time, because there did come a point where I felt like, I don't know how to do the shift work and the weekends and everything, and then do all the things that I need to take care of at home. And so that was really tough. And I had a program manager who kind of took a chance on me and let me work, again, unheard of at the time, but let me work part-time.
Part-time.
And I look at that today and I think how pivotal that was for me, because, you know, he allowed me, I didn't have to make a choice between my work or my family. And it was something that was pretty uncommon at the time. So right. I'm forever indebted to him for, you know, thinking about what those options might be and allowing me to do the part-time work.
You got a special consideration there,
And it ended up being something that got opened up, you know, even wider as we went forward, because we proved that it could work, right? It could work in the environment that we were in.
When you compare an environment now versus what you had then, how would you compare it?
I think it's really different. I think the first part is that when you look around from when I started, and of course, when I was in the workforce, if you were talking to Joanne Morgan and she's the only woman in the firing room with 450, you know, my experience was really different probably from hers. And I would say that young women today's experience is probably different, you know, from mine. But I think we have a lot more women in the workplace. A couple of things that I think are different that I really applaud is we do have family-friendly policies. We do have flexibility in our work time. We talk a lot about work-life, you know, work-life balance. And that's not just for women, that's across our workforce, which, you know, back in the 80s, you didn't really talk about work-life balance a whole lot. And so I see that as a big change and something great. I also think the mentoring that we have is fantastic. When I came into the workforce, I was in the contractor workforce when I started here. When I came in, you were assigned a mentor, and I had a great mentor. But his job was to, you know, show me sort of, here's the training materials that you need to cover, you need to do, here's, you know, where the restrooms are, the cafeteria. It was kind of a workplace orientation, if you will, but it wasn't the kind of mentorships I would say that we really encourage today, where you can go seek out someone in your senior management or maybe in an area that's completely different from where you work, and you can get some very, you know, one-on-one personal mentorship. I think that's different than maybe how it was when I started. And I think that's a great thing, because I am a mentor, and for everything that you give, you get back. You know, I learn something every time I have a mentor session. And so I think that's different. I think that training is different. I think we talk about, you know, when I started work, your training was centered on technical training. It was, what are your access requirements to get into this facility? You know, what are the technical training? And those are still really important. And we do that today, but we couple that today with leadership training, leadership development training. And I think that's wonderful for both men and women, but I do see those kinds of changes as being very different than maybe where we were 30 years ago. And so are there ways in which that we can continue to improve the workplace? Absolutely. You know, I think the way in which you approach that is in listening and understanding. It's being able to talk about issues that might be out there for women or men or you know, anyone. And it's working your way through that and addressing. But I think that you have to have, and I think we do at NASA, have a culture in which we can talk about any kind of issue. And I think you have to be able to do that. I think you have to be able to listen and take that in. But I believe that there's always ways in which we can continue to improve across the board.
It was a little more than 20 years ago when engineer Rael Thomas joined thousands of NASA engineers working to help build the International Space Station, where humans have been living and working in space continuously for the past 20 years. At first, it was a challenging time for her.
I remember being very, very ill, and unfortunately, at the time, it was a four-story building that we were doing testing in, and I kind of related to the movie Hidden Figures when she had to run across the campus in order to go to the bathroom because there were no women's bathrooms except on the fourth floor of the test facility that we were in. And on the fourth floor of the test facility, it was that the folks who owned the facility kind of didn't want the women in the other restrooms, and I was really not feeling well, and we were trying to get testing done, and I had to run up to the fourth floor in order to go and be ill and then come back down and finish the testing that we had to do. So there was a lot of trials and tribulations.
So you have a unique perspective being a woman during that time, which I take it was male dominated at the time?
There wasn't. It has changed a lot in the years that I've worked for NASA. When I started working for with NASA on shuttle, there was many, many times I was the only female in the room. Even at the start of ISS, there weren't that many women. But I think things have changed significantly. And as we progressed, even in the time we were building ISS, there became a lot more women and things did change. And even in where we were testing in Colorado, the facility did make arrangements to make it a little easier in the process of the year we were out there to do testing, that they made it a little more available for women to have a bathroom. Sometimes you have to make the place for yourself and you have to show that you are capable. And that this is where your specialty lies. Because everybody has a specialty, a trait, or a part of them that is best. And sometimes it takes a little bit of work to get there, to know what it is.
But believe in yourself, because I believe you said, you may have people who tell you otherwise. So there is an internal voice that has to keep you going, right?
I've had teachers telling me that in a particular, my university told me basically no woman has ever graduated from the aerospace engineering department. And as long as I'm the head, no woman ever will.
Oh my.
Oh yeah. It was hard. It was very, and that kind of, after I got over my bout of crying and thinking I'm never, because he was also happened to be also my counselor, the person I was supposed to go to for help. And after I got over that and had my bout of being very upset about it, my mother actually told me, she goes, well, what are you going to do about it? That was what she asked me. And I said, well, I don't know. And she said, well, are you going to let him tell you that? Or what are you going to do? Well, I'm not going to quit. And she goes, well, that's all you need to do. Just keep your head down and keep going. And you will persevere if you don't let anybody stop you. And so she was right. I did.
And you got that degree.
And I got that degree. Yes, I did. With the help of other professors who were in the same department.
Dr. Mujige Cooper is a young astrophysicist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. She helped prepare the Perseverance rover for its mission to the Red Planet. She says she knew at a very young age she wanted to pursue a career in STEM.
I knew I had to be an astrophysicist.
And so you were how old at this age?
Oh, man, I was in fifth grade. How old are fifth graders? Oh, man.
Around 12 or so?
Yeah, around 12. Yeah, 11, 12-ish. Yeah.
How about that? So, yeah. So to know from such an early age, what do you attribute that to?
Yeah, pure, I would say, a stubbornness. I think I very much latch on to goals, and goals give me purpose. And even leading up to that day, I was horrible in math and science as a child. Those were my weak subjects. But until I watched Carl Sagan's The Cosmos and someone explained to me, you have to be good at math and science to be able to do something like what Carl Sagan has done. That's when I actually took an interest in really understanding what the teachers were trying to convey to me.
What about being a young woman of color coming through the educational system, pursuing a career as an astrophysicist?
Yeah.
The challenges, did you ever feel dissuaded?
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely comments. I mean, I remember being a kid, and I don't know how much of it was just filtered through my step parents or what, but hearing like, oh, I don't see why she's that smart. I don't know why she's trying to go to college early. And that those kind of things was like, whatever. I don't have to listen to them. And then going through, I mean, especially as a person of color, a woman of color, there are a lot of possible, definite obstacles in the way. But a lot of times I try not to focus on that, because unless there's something that I can do to change the situation, I just kind of think, okay, for example, if I'm in a situation where I know somebody else that is my colleague who is a male would not get that same question, I don't focus on that. I focus on the question, and I try to just work my way through an issue professionally and not focus on the fact that, this my colleague would not have been asked that same question, or they would have been believed much easier with less questioning. But I just kind of let that slide and focus on the science.
It doesn't, those obstacles don't ever bother you?
Oh, they bother me for sure. But yeah. I have to kind of go in my little echo chamber and and just scream it all out there, and then come back out and just handle it professionally, because it's a constant battle. And there are things that, you know, in my gut, it's like, oh, I'm pretty sure this was done because of I'm a person of a young woman who is Black, right? But I don't know that for sure. It's in my gut, but it's like, okay, I just need to let it go. Just keep moving. And there were a couple instances where I found out later that it was because I was a woman, and there were things that were confirmed, you know, later on.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I can't dwell on that. I just have to push forward and let the facts decide.
All three women that you just heard from say they have rewarding careers at NASA. So we asked each one to share advice they would give to other women pursuing a career in STEM.
Don't ever give up. It's going to be hard. You're going to think you're failing. People are maybe even going to tell you that you're failing. But if that's it, if you can get through that part, if you can get through the whole college part, and yes, it's hard. But I am not a mathematician by trade, which a lot of people think being an engineer, you've got to be really good at math. No, but I am really good at common sense. And common sense usually wins out.
What would you tell other women, young women of color, who are possibly looking at this and saying, wow, I too could be an astrophysicist like Moo?
Yeah.
What advice would you give?
Well, I would say, first of all, just lean on your support structure. I mean, there are a lot of people who are obviously self-motivated. I consider myself self-motivated, but you still need your people. You still need your tribe to go to, because there will be frustrating scenarios. There will be times where you think, why are they, the world is against you almost, right? That you just got to talk it out and think, you know, no, the world's not against me. And even if they are, I need to make this trail for the person behind me. So I'm going to keep going.
The top advice is, for me, is always, you know, I have a job, and it's not just this one, but it's been in the jobs I've had before this. I have a job I love. And when you have a job you love, it doesn't feel like work, right? It feels like you get to do something, not you have to do something. And so I would say, look for that thing that you love, that thing that lights a fire within you, because then it doesn't feel like work. So it's find that job that you love. I would also say it is, be who you are. Bring yourself to what you do. We are all unique and different. And that's a wonderful thing. We have, you know, different backgrounds, different experiences, different genders, ethnicities. I mean, all of those things, right? And you want to bring all of that to the table, because that makes us a better team. It gives us a greater perspective. And so be you. That is something that I have learned over my career. I probably didn't do it that great in the beginning, you know, because I was a woman who worked with mostly men. And so there were probably, you know, times that, you know, maybe I'm having a challenge with, you know, working something that, you know, and, you know, you felt like, well, I'm not going to say anything. Or, and I think, bring who you are, bring your whole self to what you do. I think that is important. And I think the other one is in the preparation, you know, do good work. You know, there is no substitute for hard work. And so, you know, do your preparation, be ready kind of when your number is called. And so I would say those are some things that are, have worked well for me. And then maybe last would be, don't fall into the this or that idea, you know. And I'll go back to maybe one of my challenges with raising a family and you know, and working and trying to balance those two, is that it doesn't have to always be one or the other.
And that's great advice for everyone. I'm Daryl Nail, and that's going to do it for this episode of The Rocket Ranch. A special thanks to Charlie Blackwell Thompson, Rayel Thomas, and Dr. Mujigae Cooper. To learn more about everything going on at the Kennedy Space Center, check out our website at nasa.gov/Kennedy. And if you'd like to find out what's happening at our other NASA centers around the country, you can go to nasa.gov/podcast. A special shout out to our producer, John Sackman, assistant producer Natori Thompson, sound man Lauren Maythry, and editor Mike Chambers. And remember, on the Rocket Ranch, you gotta keep looking up.